Yeah, Frank here has got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's what do you call it, Kramer?
Billiard room.
No, not billiard. Not the billiards. It was...
Billiards room.
Come on already. Come on. We call it the...
The place to be.
The place to be. Yes, the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Time to play the game!
Well, you always left me satisfied and smiling, so...
But that's what she said.
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be Podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Isn't that what I just said? What is wrong with you?
Is it the Pelicans? I didn't know it was the Pelicans.
Oh,
I
know
nothing
you're like,
about the word Pelicans.
Yes.
I worked during the fucking day, okay?
And so then I'm doing this, and then he touches me, and I swear to God, this is going to sound, this is probably one of those you want to pull out the audio for your promo. He touches me with his voodoo stick.
Until you fancy to make a decision, Scott's stuck twisting in the wind, a pawn in your sick, cruel game of vacation domination. I don't know what the fuck the Department of Health is. I think this whole thing's a load of horseshit, Matt.
To do worse than Josh Richard. I'm doing it being a player and a baller. Just want me one bad chick so I can spoil her. Mates wanna be the one you respect. Even when your decks rock the shot, your silks over still be next. Got clean, never seen, so you suck my jewels. Clutch my ooze, anything I touch I bruise. Pup make his own laws, we ain't stuck with rules. Good fellas, you know you can't touch this dude. Don't push us, cause we're close to the edge. We're trying not to lose our heads.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be Podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, coming at you live on this Tuesday night. A little bit different this week, as I will be attending the big NIT game at the Dunk tomorrow night, and my PIC will be, maybe he'll be watching it, I don't know. You tell me, Scott, will you be watching the game?
I of course will, because King of the Shock Walls will be joining me tomorrow night here in Studio B. It's on ESPN3, so I'm going to have to watch it probably through my Xbox, because I have the...
Did you get the thing fixed? I know you're having problems with it.
Yeah, no, I got it fixed. I got it fixed. Probably needs an update, because it's been a while since I've used it. Usually there's two or three updates, but if not, I could probably watch it on the website. JR, always a pleasure. PTB Nation, welcome to episode 208 of the Place to Be Podcast on this Tuesday evening. Kind of a 180 weather-wise, because tonight's kind of a normal but special episode, so the weather's nice.
Yeah, it was a rough morning, though. It was not a fun commute this morning.
No, it was not terrible here in Connecticut this morning, but it could have been a lot worse. Obviously, you got the back end of all that stuff, so.
Well, I had a shovel, so to me, that's done already.
Oh, did you really? Wow.
I mean, it wasn't a lot, but it was enough to where I wanted to make sure, you know, could get the cars out and everything. So it didn't take me long, but it was just annoying more than anything.
Yeah, of course it is. But, of course, your Friars tomorrow night will be taking on the 49ers of Charlotte. And,
it's a big day tomorrow for Providence. During the day, we get the press conference, Fox Sports announcing the new Big East.
Yep.
Gus Johnson will be in the house. As rumors, he's going to be the voice of that conference. That'll be awesome.
Oh, that will be awesome, yes.
And then at night, you get the home game. So, and a lot on the line. So, we'll, you know, I'm looking for a little run here. I'll be disappointed if they fold tomorrow night. I'm really looking. This is a good chance for this young team to get some tournament experience. You know, they're gonna be a lot more favored next year to maybe make the big dance. So I'd like to see them gain a little bit of experience here this year. Yeah. But you know what? We talked enough college hoops last night. If you haven't listened, go back. If you're interested in March Madness, we did a mega preview with the expert crew. Our bracket, our fun bracket, of course, no money on the line.
No
gambling purposes involved. But our bracket is posted. If you need the information, it's on the Facebook page. It's also on the Bigelow34.proboards.com message board. We have 33 entries already, Scott.
Nice.
So there's still room for you to get yours in. The winner will get to appear with us on a vintage
ball. Which one is yours, just so people want to know?
Mine is Timothy Well and Chris Dunn.
Chris Dunn. Of course, mine is Big Shock, Hoya Saxa. We had a nice show last night. One of the best ones of the three, I think.
Yeah.
So check it out. You got a couple days. These first 2 days don't really count. So
interesting, though. You know, Andrew Reich, Chad Campbell let his boss listen to the show last night. He's on a work trip, and he wanted to listen. His boss was there and wasn't a fan of Mr. Reich.
Really?
Oh. Yeah. Said he was a know-it-all.
we've all known that from the beginning.
He likes Rotella, though.
Yes. All right. But that was last night. This is tonight. Time we get back into the squared circle. And you're wondering, guess what? The big silver box is closed tonight. We're going into the platinum box because it's a special edition of the Vintage Vault this evening. We're taking a one-week hiatus from the calendar year of 1999 this week. Next week, we will tackle the big show that year, of course, WrestleMania 15. We'll get to that next week. Tonight, we're going to do a show that you picked. This is all you. You, PTB Nation. This isn't JR and I. This is you guys.
Right, and we put this up here. We're going to do this once every couple months. We'll do another one. Maybe we'll take the top vote-getter after vote and pick four other shows to go with it. So here are the final tally. Mm-hmm. Checking in with just one lonely, sad vote was Starrcade 87. Three votes was the first edition of Monday Night Raw from 111.93. Mm-hmm. Five votes, and the one I chose, was Slammery 99. Mm-hmm. Barely Legal 97 came in with 13 votes. And the show we are reviewing tonight is the World Wrestling Federation's big event from August of 1986. Came in with 20 votes, 47.62% of the 42 voters chose that. So we will thank everyone who contributed. We'll have another poll up in a few weeks. We'll have, I think, Barely Legal will be in there. And maybe we'll throw Slamboree 99 in there as well with a few.
You know, we
shows.
Should do, JR. We should leave the ones. Maybe we'll leave the ones that were in there and just add a new one. And see,
well,
see
no, I think you're going to get a minimum vote. You're going to get like 10% of the vote or else you're
okay,
out.
Okay, all right.
So the first Raw and Starrcade 87 are out. Okay. If you get at least 10% of the vote, you can remain for the all next
kind of like
go.
Kind of like the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, that's it. If you can't get 10% out of the five, you're out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so you guys picked this, and this is actually kind of a fun show. I'm looking forward to this one tonight, JR, because this is kind of an odd era in World Wrestling Federation history because this is the longest gap in the history of the new era without pay-per-view.
Right.
But let's open it up and we'll discuss.
And I'm excited to do it too because just quickly because it's kind of the last gap in our podcast reviews. It's really the last major WWF supercard we haven't reviewed, you know, outside of the England shows, which we haven't done. Well, I think we did one night only, but. You know, we did Wrestling Classic, and we reviewed this one in written form last summer, so you can follow along with that on the message board, too. And so I was glad. I mean, on one hand, I kind of wanted to review either ECW or WCW, but on the other hand, it's good to kind of the completest in us can wrap this up.
Yeah, exactly.
Finish off the catalog.
Yeah, big gap between shows here. So August 28th, 1986, live from Exhibition Stadium in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Of course, Exhibition Stadium, the old home of the Toronto Blue Jays. JR, how about a little history of the old, as they used to, sometimes they call it the CNE Stadium. What was its history?
It is built in 1959, closed in 1989, and demolished in 1999. So it actually sat there for 10 years. Course was built for $17.6 million, and actually that was the reconfiguration for baseball in 1976. Mm-hmm. You know the architect was? G.W. Goinlock.
Wasn't he it sounds like a Ring of Honor manager or something. Yes.
Home to the Blue Jays for 20 years, the Argonauts for 30 years, and the Vanier Cup of the CIS for 3 years. So there you go. And it holds max for football is 54,741. Baseball, 43,737.
Yes.
We got 61,470 here, so an awesome crowd.
Yes, 61,407. That's a really good crowd for... Mm. And we really haven't even hit the peak yet of professional wrestling, particularly WWF. We're a little bit before and 61,000. This tells you how hot Canada was for pro wrestling. It tells you what a hotbed that country as a whole was.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, as JR mentioned, this was the home of the Blue Jays before they moved on to Sky Dome. I can't believe it stayed up for 10 years. I wonder if the Argos still played there. Nah, they had to play it.
No, is it closed?
So it just sat empty for 10 years?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought
it closed and then was demolished.
Oh, I didn't hear you said it was closed. I just said the Blue Jays left. Okay, so that's weird. Such a big place to just stay empty for 10 years. Mm. It's kind of odd. Again, your crowd, 61,470, which is pretty damn good. Your triple announce team, kind of a unique group here.
Yeah.
Of course, JR, another reason why I love the show is I always love going back and hearing the voice of the World Wrestling Federation.
Of course.
The voice of our childhood. That is, of course, iconic Gorilla Monsoon. One of my favorite early color commentators besides Jesse, and that was Luscious Johnny V.
And I will say this. Going into the show, I was never a big fan of him. I probably just hadn't heard enough, maybe, outside of the handful of prime times and house shows we have with him on it. I enjoyed him on the show.
I did, too.
I thought he was pretty funny in the show. I enjoyed his stylings, and I thought he was a better announcer than manager, to be honest.
Yeah, he probably was. Really, I mean, his only real claim to fame as a manager was the Dream Team.
Yeah.
The original Dream Team, the tag team champs, Greg the Hammer and the Brutai.
Oh, you mean he managed the 92 Olympic team?
You know what? He probably could have, and they still would have won the gold.
Come on, Ewing. Get out there.
Ah, come on. This cigar and his bespectacled T-shirts. And one more guy in the booth, future WWF Hall of Famer. And I think he's an NFL Hall of Famer. If not an NFL Hall of Famer, he's at least one of the greats. And that is the Cat, Ernie Ladd. Big-time heel in the 70s. Feuded with both Bob Backlund and Bruno Sammartino. And
I didn't feel like
Malice.
He added too much to this, though. I thought it was more Johnny and Gorilla really carried.
Yeah, I know. I don't think he
was
really
needed. It was
the
really big cat, by the way, not the cat. The big cat.
The big cat, Ernie Ladd, yes. He was a big guy, so. There was your broadcast.
I don't think he's a Hall of Fame. He's in the Chargers Hall of Fame.
Okay. No, he played for the Chiefs, too, I think.
He was a four-time All-Star, played for the Chargers for 4 years, the Oilers for a year, and then the Chiefs for a year.
Oh, okay.
He was picked in the 15th round of the AFL draft and the 4th round of the NFL draft.
Oh, okay. So there is your your broadcast team. It's a big show, a lot of matches. So, but I think you'll find it quite interesting, particularly you younger listeners and younger listeners and fans who may not know what the hell we're talking about. But yeah, you can find this tape probably on eBay or or Amazon. I don't know how expensive it is. You know, it's weird. In terms of tapes, I feel like the 90s tapes are more expensive than the 80s tapes.
Mm.
It's really weird, but in any event, let's hop right in. Our opener is a interesting little tag match, a team that we've talked about often, so we're not going to get into them. The team of Jumpin' Jim Brunzel, B. Brian Blair, the Killer Bees, still pretty hot right now. This is a team when I was a kid that I really thought was a top contender for the tag team straps. Taking on the team of Haas Funk, of course, Dory Funk Jr., and, no, not that funk, another funk, Jimmy Jack.
I already work around the clock.
Jimmy Jack was not a funk, of course. By this point, Terry, who was, of course, was around a lot in 1986, started the year actually feuding with Hulk Hogan. They had a pretty good world title feud early on in 86, and then, of course, he was at WrestleMania 2, and then he kind of vanished. So,
No, I won't be.
That's pretty much what he said. I mean, Dennis said it to him there. So they brought in Jimmy Jack Funk, who was masked. And we talked about Dory Funk.
It's a main event. It's just a main event. You think I'm not going to be in a main event?
This wasn't even a main event. So even if you were in this match.
For him, it would have been.
Main event.
Yeah, Jimmy Junk. Jimmy Junk. pretty much.
Jimmy Junk.
Jimmy Junk replaced Terry Funk.
Might as well call him a hump.
Basically, is Jimmy Junk. So Terry bolted, had his run, and as always, a nomadic, moving from place to place during this time in his career, but had his little run with Hogan. So he moves along, and they had added this third member, Jimmy Jack Funk, portrayed by Jesse Barr, began in Florida in the 80s, had a stint in Puerto Rico, showed up here as the storyline brother, of course not a legit brother, of Terry and Haas. Would remain in the role until June 87 when he left the promotion, headed to Texas, and then to Portland before calling it a career. Of course, the brother of Art Barr, correct?
Yes, older brother of Art Barr. Jesse actually, I believe, was the Florida heavyweight champion because he is at, I want to say Starrcade 84. 84, 85. I think it's 84. He actually defended the Florida heavyweight title against, I think it was Mike Graham. I'll have to go back to
Jesse Barr?
Yeah.
I can tell you one moment.
I'm pretty sure. I think it was Starrcade 84. I think he defended the Florida.
Well, he definitely held it.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure.
Well, no, let's see. He won it in October 84 from Scott McGee.
Okay.
And he lost in April 85. So, yeah, it was probably Starrcade 84.
Yeah, because I know it was one of the Starrcades you and I did, and I'm pretty sure he fought Mike Graham. And Jesse Barr kept the title. So, of course, Dory Funk, very quickly, legendary wrestler, won the NWA title in a world title in 69, held it for 4 years, lost it to Harley Race, who would end up losing the title to Dory's brother, Terry, in 70, 75, I think. 75. 76.
And just a Justin Barterfield, Mike Graham, 11:43 to retain the Florida heavyweight title. Starrcade 84.
At 84. Okay, there we go. And again, Dory, legendary wrestler, of course, bounced around. He was part of that Amarillo promotion with his father, Dory Sr. And so there we go. He beat Gene Kaniski in 69 to win the world title, held it till 73, lost it to Harley. Bounced around, of course, they wrestled at WrestleMania 2. Mm-hmm. Haas and Terry defeated the JYD and Tito Chico Santana. Here they take on the Killer Bees.
Yep. And Haas would leave before Jimmy Junk, and he would hang around as a jobber to the stars, pretty much.
Yeah, well, Jimmy Junk, infamous story there. He was the one that allegedly got the Rockers fired the first time in the WWF before they went back to AWA and then came back to the WWF in 87. Or 88.
That's why he's a piece of junk.
Yeah, Jimmy Junk got him fired for getting him drunk. I have a winner! You're no junk, Art. Never. I like this match, actually. I graded it much higher than you did.
I
think it was
much.
The crowd.
I mean, come on.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was the crowd. I know, but anytime you grade a match under two, you probably don't think very highly of it.
Well, no. You and I tend to have a little bit different of a rating system, because I notice a lot when our comments are similar and then you'll go at a different level. So I don't know, 1.5 to me isn't awful. To me, it's just kind of maybe slightly below average, but
I always consider in our grades 2 is average. 2 is,
yeah, so 1.5 is slightly below. So you're telling me, yeah, this is better than average match?
Slightly better.
Okay.
I don't know, maybe it's the Killer Bees that carry it.
I like the Bees. I definitely like the Bees. I just didn't think there was that much to the match, that's all.
Nah, it was okay. I think maybe the crowd was very hot. Again, 61,000, even though it was outdoor. Crowd was very good, and they'd stay hot through the whole show, because there's a lot of really hot feuds going into this show. So this wasn't one of these doormat shows where you think it's hot, you have a good crowd, then all the matches are garbage. Not this show. The matches may not all be 5 stars, but the feuds and the build are incredible. This isn't one of them. This is just a filler opener. But I thought it was okay. You know, Haas was Dory was not, I don't want to say he was, would you consider him over the hill at this point, like past his prime? Probably.
Yeah, but, Dory Funk past his prime is still better than a lot of guys in their prime. So yeah. I think it's one of those things where maybe it's not the worst thing for, it's not a negative for it to say he's past his prime. I mean, he is. It's the truth. Yeah. He aged. But
exactly. But again, I think the Killer Bees, Brunzell, B. Brian Blair, both in their prime at this time. Contenders for the straps. Gorilla probably did the whole championship committee watching very closely in this match line. One of the little things that you and I miss about old school WWF. Things like championship committees.
Yes.
Watching for who the number one contender would be.
You had to.
You had to. Yeah. You had to go up the ladder. You had to climb the ladder to get your title shot. And, they get the win here. Brunzell pins Jimmy Junk with an inside cradle. A little under 7 minutes. Good length. Nothing fancy. Killer Bees get the win. So pretty solid opener. Get the crowd going, and the fan favorites, the Killer Bees, get the victory. So,
oh, Jimmy Junk. Did you come by the ranch?
Jimmy Junk. Oh, Dennis, you could have put on the mask. Well, you could have been Dennis Junk. Dennis Junk Funk, baby. Dennis. I'm gonna come on, so Dennis Junk Funk. All right. Next up, two really good workers, in my opinion. Although one of them, I don't say he was past his prime, but he kind of, I don't want to say, fell off the discipline wagon, if you will. The Magnificent Rocco, who is one of those guys, we've talked about often, JR, in some of these earlier vaults. Here was a guy who really was red hot in the pre-pay-per-view era, 81 through 84. I think next to Piper, I don't think you'd find a hotter heel on the roster.
Well, I think he had a great 85 as well. It's just that there's only one pay-per-view, and for some reason they decided not to have him on it.
Yeah, that was weird.
But, I think through that run, 81 to 85 was really his high point. By the time pay-per-view was really becoming a major outlet for the promotion, he was starting to taper off a little bit. And he'd still hang around, but wasn't the same, wasn't in that kind of heel window where he was this dominant IC champion alongside with Mr. Fuji doing the skits, the Fuji Vice that we talked about on the manager show. I love Morocco. He's one guy that you can put on my list of guys I've come to appreciate more by going back and watching a lot of this older stuff from the early to mid-80s. Someone I didn't really appreciate at the time growing up, because by the time I saw him in the limited access I had growing up was just, you know, the roided up jackass from WrestleMania 4.
Yes. Yeah. No, you got to watch his stuff. That's why I kind of wish on like 24/7, well, not 24/7, but or network or whatever the hell outlet it's going to be. I think they need to show some more actual weekly shows from 81, 82, 83. I don't think we get a good enough fill, because the only weekly shows they show are the ones we know, you know, 87, 88, Superstars. And
well, they do show that. I think it's like Championship Wrestling or whatever.
Yeah,
Is on now. I think that's from the early 80s, but yeah, there's not much other than that. I mean, there's been some house shows.
Right. Yeah. No, and he's the guy, he just deserves more credit than I think people realize, because
I'll tell you, we pick up a lot from him is those TNTs.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Him and Fuji were just absolutely hilarious. Great, great comedic timing. Fuji Vice, Fuji Bandito, Fuji Medical, just such fun. You know, he had a hot early 86 because, he was part of that whole, heel beatdown on that infamous Saturday night's main event in Phoenix, where King Kong Bundy crushed Hulk Hogan's ribs, which of course led to the big, steel cage title match at WrestleMania 2. And he was of course dumped in that god awful opening match with Don Morocco, which of course would tell you where that show was headed after that opening match. It was kind of a shame that, Morocco didn't get more cred in these early, early days of pay-per-view. But his opponent is a guy that probably goes down as one of the legitimate fan favorites of the early years of pay-per-view. And that is, at the time, he was the name King Tonga.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we would know him in the future as Haku.
Haku!
Haku! This is a really good match.
Yeah.
Morocco put his boots on. And, I mean, I'm not saying 4.5 stars, but it was solid.
We'll give let's get a quick background, because I don't know if we ever gave it with Haku/Tonga.
I don't think so.
Yeah, competed professionally at a very young age. At the age of 10, was among a group of children sent from Tonga to Japan to study sumo wrestling. In 1974, moved to Japan permanently, started his sumo career. After some controversy, he retired from the sport in 1976, began wrestling professionally for All Japan. In the early 80s, he took on the name King Tonga, moved to Canada. In Montreal, he wrestled, and then joined up with Vince in early 86. So it was right around this time he was starting that transition. Gorilla's kind of hinting at it, that he's going to be called Haku, that he wants to be called that. So there's this little weird transition over the next year or so where they worked that in. But for now, still slightly King Tonga.
Yes, he was clean-shaven, didn't have his trademark beard yet. But it is just a really good match. It was just nice to see him on the show after not being at WrestleMania 1 and that terrible opener at WrestleMania 2 with the guy in our main event tonight. We'll get to him later. Yeah, I mean, this is just a great match. There was one move in particular I remember. Morocco wrapped Tonga's leg around the ring post, which you would think, yeah, that's not a big deal. But when you wrap like an open foot, you know, ankle bone and everything, just like pushing it hard against the metal post, it's got to hurt. Of course, you know, King Tonga is as tough as a $2 steak, so nothing hurts him.
I thought Morocco definitely looked a little bulked up and not in the good way. I mean, he's still roided and juiced, but you could tell he looked like he's been letting go on the cardio a little bit. I mean, he was never a guy that was in great physical shape outside of just being jacked.
Right.
But here he was starting to get a little bloated, a little hefty. And Johnny V actually tries to argue that he's lost weight, which is maybe in the Sapphire way, but not legitimate. So I thought the match was good until the end. The last few minutes I thought dragged a little bit because you could tell they were stalling until the bell. Morocco was kind of just meandering about and letting Tonga come back, and then it looked like Tonga was going to get the win and we get the draw. So I think this would have been better served just to have an actual finish and just have it go, you know, maybe 14 or 15 minutes instead of tacking on that extra 5 or 6 to get to the draw. You could have given the Tonga the win here. I don't think it would have hurt Morocco too bad to lose this match.
I agree. One thing that I've learned as a wrestling viewer, and you have as well, draws kill crowds.
Mm.
And draws are bad ideas, particularly big crowds. You know, you want to draw at a house show. You got to draw at a house show. But you don't want to do a draw in front of 61,000 people. That's just bad. You don't want that. You want a winner, and I agree with you. King Tonga should have got the win. Morocco was bulletproof. Yeah, I guess he was at this point. Not that it really mattered, but he should have got the win here. But fun match. You know, Morocco was, you know, carrying a little beef, but King Tonga was just getting started, and he would end up having a very lucrative and great career in the World Wrestling Federation. But this time he he made a lot of that too. But here he does not get the win. It ends in a 20-minute draw. I can't believe Morocco actually went 20 minutes. So, all right. So there you go. Magnificent Morocco, King Tonga end in a 20-minute draw. Good match, but like JR said, probably could have hacked about 5 minutes and had a legitimate finish. Speaking of guys that are blown up, this one's going to be fun. Oh, my God. You go to one of the most likable guys of the 80s in Morocco, two guys, Morocco and King Tonga, to one of the easily the most unlikable guys on the face of the earth. And that is,
I wouldn't go that far. I mean,
well, I mean, he's well, he's
unlikable
he's,
guys on the face of the earth.
Well, all right, maybe I went a little too far there.
Will you stop?
I'm sorry, Gorilla. I'm sure Gorilla doesn't say many nice things about him either.
I'm sure
because he was kind of an ass in this match. It was big, strong man Ted Arcidi from Boston, Massachusetts. Maybe he's from Beverly. Probably one too many buffets at Kowloon's. Taking on veteran Tony Gurria from, of course, Auckland, New Zealand. Do we need a little background on Tony?
Sure. He began his pro career in his native New Zealand in 1971. Made his way to San Francisco, where he teamed up with, of course, Pat Patterson. 1972, signed with the WWWF, where he'd win the tag team titles on five separate occasions with four different partners. Quit the slut. He's like the Lou Albano of tag team wrestlers.
I love the way you said that, though. He went to San Francisco where he, of course, hooked up with Pat Patterson.
I didn't say that. I just know it's a well-known team, Patterson and Gurria. Take it for how you wish. All right. So in 82, he began working singles, became a fairly prolific jobber to the stars, remained in that role till 86. He retired and still works as a road agent to this day.
Yes. And I remember when I lived in Hamden in the late 90s, early 2000s, he always was at the World Gym near my apartment. So when I used to go work out, he'd be there. And let me tell you something, Tony Gurria, very nice guy. Would help. He would, if it was quiet at the gym and, you know,
I'm sure he saw you struggling.
And yes, of course he did. And he would help spot me. I'm not going to lie, of course. I mean, I wasn't struggling. I wasn't, you know, trying to squat, you know, 580 or anything. But, you know, he'd help. You know, he was just a really nice guy. And, you know, we would talk wrestling.
I need someone to either Photoshop or write a fan fiction of Scott and Tony Gurria's workout sessions back in Hamden in the 80s.
And have Vince with the black tank top on. And, geez. And maybe you have
Ted Arcidi Greenhouse.
Background.
Get on it.
Yeah, and then maybe have Ted Arcidi in the background with some lines. Ted Arcidi, I don't think we've given him the background, so we'll go
there.
Quickly, did you see last night?
They played it.
But of course, they didn't play it the PTB way, though.
They should have. If they had any balls, they would have.
Well, had they done it at 10:45 instead of 10:45, well, of course, the show went on till it seemed like 3 o'clock in the morning. But
All right. Arcidi is a training as a weightlifter for years, established a world record by lifting 705 pounds. He was recruited by Vince McMahon, signed to the WWF in late 85, competed in the Battle Royal at WrestleMania 2, but didn't make it out of 86. He was released when fellow strongman, the one and only Mr. Ken Patera, and his creamy legs returned to the promotion. Can't have too many jacked up weightlifters, of course. Mm-hmm. Arcidi would work Calgary in Texas before retiring in 1990. Still maintains a gym and supplement company in New England.
Hmm.
I should go find it. Arcidi Supplements.
Arcidi Supplements. I wonder if he looks the same with his long, curly hair and maybe the same singlet. No. This match is just it was just awful. Arcidi can barely move around. There were a lot of rumors back then that he was a big-time coke user. You know, there was one Piper's Pit where he's, like, totally, you know, he's, like, sweating. His eyes are bulging. He's all, like, geeked up and breathing heavy. And Piper's looking at him like, what the fuck's wrong with this guy? So there was a lot of rumors of – not that he was the only one probably
If he wasn't doing it, they'd probably be looking at him weird.
Yeah, probably. But he was the only one that clearly couldn't hide it. But
and if Piper's – if Piper thinks you're too coked up, then you know you got a problem.
Yeah, exactly. Pretty much. So – And his matches were just unbelievably terrible. This was back in Vince's heyday of just wanting to have every jacked up guy in the universe on this promotion without realizing that half these dudes. Ted Arcidi is probably the prime example of the divide between Northern wrestling fans and Southern wrestling fans. You know, a lot of people would say the Crockett's or these guys would never have a Ted Arcidi in their promotion if the guy couldn't move and wrestle a match longer than 12 minutes. But Vince wasn't looking for that. It was a different kind of promotion. However, when you can't even work like a 5-minute match,
no,
you're pretty fucked.
He was still wound up and tight, and yeah, he couldn't do anything.
No, this match, barely 3 minutes. He gets the win with a bear hug. The bear hug's even bad. I felt bad for Gurria.
All right, we may have to send our New Hampshire correspondent, Charlie, out on the search here. Our city strength systems, 186 Granite Street, Manchester, New Hampshire.
Oh, it's right near him and his bro.
I'll have to send them out on a mission for us.
I think his brother still lives in Manchester.
Yeah, Charlie doesn't, but his brother Kenny does.
Kenny does. I know Kenny does. I wasn't sure if Charlie did or not. Yeah, this match is just going to be terrible. Yeah, just don't let him listen to the show. all right, so there you go. Ted Arcidi gets the win. Not a very good match. So after three matches, crowd's still pretty hot, but they're wondering, you know, when the good stuff's going to come, because these first three are a little lukewarm to terrible. However, we do pick up the character face heel level with this next match, because we have one of the hottest faces in the promotion against one of the newest hottest heels in the promotion. The hot baby face is, of course, the Junkyard Dog, always loved by fans. He hadn't gotten too bloated yet. That would be at least be for another year, although it was kind of showing, but not as bad as it would by early 88. His opponent, new on the block as a heel, at least this kind of heel, and that is the adorable Adrian Adonis. I don't remember him being... Was he really, like, I'm trying to remember, was he overly effervescent by this match?
Because he was even at WrestleMania 2, he had the pink.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm thinking of earlier on. I remember he fought JYD in a TV match. It was earlier, 86, and he wasn't as
Yeah, but at this point, he definitely was. And on the August 2nd Championship Wrestling, Junkyard Dog was a guest on the Flower Shop. Of course, that was Adrian Adonis' talk segment. After Jimmy Hart tried to attack the JYD, Adonis grabbed a flower. I'm sorry, JYD grabbed a flower pot. JYD grabbed a flower pot and cracked Adonis on the head with it.
Right.
Leading to this match here.
Yes.
Jimmy Junk Funk.
What a hump. Hump on the shoulder. This match is... First of all, I felt bad for Adonis because he probably faced one of yours and my most hated guys in the history of wrestling. And this you cannot debate. And that is, of course, Uncle Elmer.
Oh, God.
At WrestleMania 2. Your favorite thing.
The Matt Rotella dream match.
Exactly. You love hillbillies about as much as I love midgets. So,
I like midgets, but only when they're playing hoops and March Madness.
March Madness.
When you got your midget bracket.
Could you imagine walking around with a...
I got Shorty and the gang going all the way to the Final Four.
Who's got Little Beaver? Yeah, this match is...
I got Dank, Wink, Pink, Wink, and Quink going to the finals.
Finals. Who do you got? Cheesy, Squeezy, and Harry?
I got Cheesy, Squeezy, Rotella, and Queasy going down in the first round.
Queasy, Rotella. So, this match
is... midgets.
I'm trying to remember. I'm trying not to look ahead. I wonder if there's any midgets on this show.
Who cares?
Who cares? So
supposed to playing basketball. I don't care.
And there you were. So, Adrian Adonis, Junkyard Dog, of course, neither guy was going to lose because JYD was the Jim Duggan before there was Jim Duggan. And then
I didn't mind this match, though. They actually showed a little bit of energy. They were really moving and busting it. And JYD, you know, he was obviously great in Mid-South and all that stuff. But by the time he got here, he always seemed very, I don't want to say disinterested, but he was never in any kind of motivation to get moving. It always seemed to be a little bit a step behind, but this match, he really kicked into gear. He seemed pretty focused, and he was beating on Adonis all around the ring, and Adonis was bumping like crazy for him, and like, you know, Adonis, even his advanced size was still an awesome seller and a bumper. He would fly all over the place, and they had a brawl on the floor, and JYD snuck in and beat the count for the win, but I don't know. They went out and busted it for 4 minutes when they didn't necessarily have to, so I gave him, you know, a little dap for that.
Yeah, he was... As much as JYD, still one of the most popular guys in the company, it was getting to the point now where his stature, which was red hot when he came in mid-84, was really starting to fall down the ladder a little bit. Some newer, fresher baby faces in better shape and younger were coming up the ladder. So, but he still was red hot with the fans. He was still overly popular, and he'd get a good pop here in Canada. But and he would actually get the win by count out. And so the crowd got the win they wanted, but Adonis... Cut to on the wrestling album.
Yes. Right, what did you think of Joe Eddie attacking Adonis with his chain before the bell? It was kind of weird, wasn't it?
It was very weird. It was very, I bet you it was very Mid-South-ish. I bet you he did that a lot when he was in Mid-South attacking heel, you know, when he was in a blood feud with a Butch Reed or something. I bet you that's what he did. Maybe he was using it to kind of, you know, fire the crowd up a little bit. It did kind of surprise me. I'm not going to lie. But I used to remember on TNT, because he was on TNT about as often as freaking Ricky Steamboat in Morocco was. And he always had the same, like, members-only jacket with his hat and, like, all the gold rings and you know, no shirt underneath. And very pimpish. But he was kind of falling down the ladder a little bit. Some younger guys were coming into the roster. But still very hot with the fans. And he gets the win here. But Adonis does not eat a pin. He might have eaten something else after the match.
Yeah,
but he
one of Morocco's hoagies.
Yeah, exactly. I wonder if there's a Kowloon's buffet up in Toronto.
Speaking of Kowloon's, go ahead.
I was about to say, I think we need to do a poll. We have to talk about this. Our next poll, not a tournament, but our next poll on Bigelow34.proboards.com. What is your favorite cut on the first wrestling album?
And Scott will sing the winning choice.
Exactly. On the air with the PTB choir, which we all know who the singers are.
Yes.
We're not going to tell you now because you all know who we're talking about. But, well, I mean, obviously there's so many awesome cuts on that album. Tutti Frutti. We'll have Rotella. You know what'll happen? I'll sing the winning cut and Rotella will sing Tutti Frutti.
Yes,
what do you think?
And we'll have someone sing Lou Albano's. Maybe we'll just do a whole album. We'll recreate the whole album.
Oh my God, I just thought of something. How about the entire PTB Nation reenacts Land of a Thousand Dances?
There you go, episode 300. That's all it's going to be. It's just that song.
Who gets to do I'm going to stretch it from here to New Jersey? Oh God. All right. Anyway, there you go. Junkyard Dog wins, but Adrian Adonis does not.
I was going to say you're going to know how to jerk. hold on. Speaking of Kowloon's, I don't know if we mentioned this, but our buddy John Walters, RJ Brewer, going to be up in Mass this weekend, Saturday night.
Oh.
Up at the big time.
Oh, he's joining his boys up there. It's been a while since he's been up, huh?
Yeah.
Was the last time he was up here the last time we were there?
No, I feel like he's been up here one other time.
Might have been. Yeah, fortunately, neither you nor I will be able to make it this time. But
he's going to be busy. He's got a Lucha Libre kicking off
soon.
They got a tour he's been promoting. A lot going on. He was on hang on one sec. He is on some big talk show. He's on Hannity.
Oh!
Friday.
Oh, very cool. I'm going to have to DVR it.
I'm sure it's already in your season pass, so you should be good.
Hannity is not in my season pass. No. No. I don't watch Hannity every week.
You know, like blowhards.
I'm like, what?
Blowhards.
Blowhards. Well, I mean, Sean's okay, but I like his radio show better than his TV show. All right, anyway.
Well, hang on. Big Time Wrestling. Let me get the card here for you. Give our boy a plug. Since we're not allowed to have him back on after Submarine our last time.
Yeah, no, he got more death. He got more hate mail than Matt did in episode 50. I didn't think that would ever happen.
All right, coming to Malden High School.
Isn't that where we were? No,
no
we
you
were
know
in
what? Wait.
Malden City Hall.
What's this shit? Nope. Was this last weekend? I thought it was this weekend.
What's it say? 16th or 23rd?
16th. Maybe do we miss it?
That's last weekend. You sure?
I thought it was this upcoming. Hang on, what's this one? Big Time comes to Boston. Is this really? No, that's October 5th, 2012.
Oh, jeez. They haven't updated their site in a while.
No, it's just I'm looking at, like, stuff he's attended.
Oh, okay.
Oh, right here, no, Webster. I thought so.
Yeah, it's on Malden. It's Webster. You said
no,
Webster.
No, they were in Malden last weekend. He was
yeah,
there.
No, you said Webster to me today, or yesterday. It was Webster.
Yeah, it's Danbury on Friday, Webster on Saturday, and Augusta, Maine, Sunday. Flair in the house, all three.
Oh, very cool. I wonder if I can have as much beer for him as he did when he came to that show that we went to in 2008.
I wonder if he'll be with him again.
this
is the big spring tour. Let's see
very
if we
nice.
Can pick up the... All right, Nash is going to be there.
Oh, here we go. We usually like to hop on the show.
He's wrestling Nash. Carlito, Junior Fatu, a.k.a. Rikishi, Shane Helms, Buff, the BTW Divas. It's going to be quite the crew.
A lot of those guys I saw at the convention in New Jersey back in October.
Yeah. Helms. I think it's a better crew than we saw at that time. Well, we saw Honky and Valentine.
Yeah, we saw that old Indian dude, Richard, whatever the hell his name was, that Honky came to job
Richard
to.
Richard the Indian. None of,
yes, and then there was the that guy, that really old guy that wrestled in his underwear, whatever the guy was. Matt Rotella's T-shirt, whatever. Yeah, no, bummer we won't be able to make it this weekend. We'll have to catch a good indie show again maybe this summer if John's back in town. Maybe we can make a Kowloon's road trip. I haven't had one since we went last time. Slick Wagner Brown.
Tommy Dreamer is at the one in Danbury.
Oh, wow, there you go. Kind of sad because that was the last time we saw you know Paul Bearer in person. Kind of a bummer, but okay. So there we go. Junkyard Dog gets the win. Adrian Adonis does not get pinned. All right. Next up, speaking of NWA, a guy who came from there, Red Hot Heel in the early 80s, came here as a babyface and just never really seemed to reach his stride. It wasn't the kind of guy that the WWF audience really warmed up to.
No. It was an odd fit, especially as a face.
Yeah. He was – trying to remember what his nickname was as a good guy. Anyway, when he was a heel in, you know, Mid-Atlantic and in Georgia, he was Dirty Dick Slater. I don't know what the fuck his name was as a Southerner Dick Slater, Cowboy Dick Slater. I don't remember what his nickname was when he's a good guy. But he's a bad guy, it's Dirty Dick Slater. Taking on perennial...
I think it was like the Rebel something.
Rebel Dick Slater, yeah, something like that.
You, Mr. Powers, you need to sashay out of here. Sashay off my property where I hold my keys.
I don't think he ever said sashay. I don't think Dick Slater could say sashay. Dick Slater grew up in Tampa, Florida boy in the early 70s. Turned down a chance to play for the Dolphins
Can't blame him. Well, I guess in the 70s.
No, they were still pretty good. He was trained in Tampa.
Did you see that new the Leafs logo for them?
Yeah, you know, what's his name? Lucas. What the heck's his name? The Uni Watch guy.
Oh, okay.
I can't remember his name. The guy that does the uniforms. He did a piece on it. There were actually people. He did a contest where people were coming up with their own ideas for what the Dolphins' new unis are going to be. The Browns actually are getting new uniforms next year, too.
No, I wasn't very impressed with the Dolphins. It was kind of flaccid looking. It was kind of lame.
Yeah, there were some people that were really weird ones. Their jerseys had like a big sun in the middle of it. Some of them were just unbelievably atrocious. The Browns are getting new unis, too. God only knows how much newer you can make those. But yeah, remember there was somebody was – what was it? Somebody was signing a contract, and they caught like a piece of this new logo on the table, and then the Dolphins tried to like – throw the red herring and took a picture of the table and it was still the old logo.
I think the logo could be a red herring. It'd be better than this limp dolphin that they have.
Flaccid. Yes, the Viagra-less dolphin on the
Rotella dolphin. Flaccid and limp and blah.
Of course, we'll see all these new logos and colors coming up the draft coming up in April. Yeah, the Dolphins are getting new unis. The Browns. Rumors are the Vikings are going to tweak their colors and their logo, too. So we'll have to wait and see. But yes, I did see the rumored Dolphin logo, and it was pretty piss poor. And then other people were putting their own ideas for what the uniforms are going to be. So anyway, Dick Slater started his career with Eddie Graham, of course, Championship Wrestling from Florida. Left there, spent some time out in California and Nevada before heading down to Georgia, where he would wrestle for Jim Barnett. And he'd really break out there.
Busted right
through the shock wall. 8 years in Georgia, and then, of course, he headed to the Carolinas, worked with, of course, the Crockett's. Then he jumped to the WWF in 1986. The first time I ever remember seeing Dick Slater, it was he and Cowboy Bob Orton cashed in the bounty on Ric Flair via World Heavyweight Champion at Harley Race in mid-1983. Busted him up, pile drove him, and broke his neck, and Flair had to retire. And then he came back a couple months later, started whipping a softball bat around, and wow, that's when I really started getting into Southern wrestling was that feud.
Yeah, and if there's anywhere he's going to be a face, you'd think it would be there. I mean, just coming up north at a time when WWF was still kind of regionalized. I mean, they were expanding, but still pretty regionalized. And to be a face Southerner carrying the rebel flag just didn't make sense. I don't get it.
No, it was bizarre. It was very bizarre. And here he takes on, again, first of all, he takes on, of course, back then, countries and that stuff didn't matter, but he took on Canadian Iron Mike Sharp, but nobody was going to, I mean, back then, strictly face heel, so even if in Canada he wasn't going to get cheered, although he always got announced as Canada's greatest athlete, which I always thought was funny.
Made his debut in Calgary, 1977, stayed there till 83. He got a little bit of a push when he came in, had his trademark black forearm brace. By 84, though, he was down in the lower mid-card in jobber status, just opening house shows and whatnot. He'd remain in the role till 95 and actually runs a wrestling school out of New Jersey.
Yep.
Pretty successful one, I believe, right? It's one of the biggest ones. Is that
it is one of the biggest ones. Yeah. One of
He's
the, guy,
the Monster
guys.
Factory, is he?
No, that's the other guy. I thought he was, honestly.
This is just Mike Sharp's school of wrestling.
Okay. Honestly, before you told me that, I thought he was back in Canada. I didn't realize.
Well,
he was
it's closed down now, so he may be. But yeah. Traded Mike Bucci, Chris Ford, who went on to be Crowbar, and the Haas brothers.
Oh, Mike Bucci, of course, was Nova and those guys. And,
of course,
who's the last?
Huh?
Oh, Charlie Haas. Well, Charlie Haas. He probably went there after he, or the Haas brothers probably went there after they both went to Seton Hall. So.
And known as being very OCD. He'd shower and wash his hands compulsively at arenas and fold and refold his clothes all the time. And
oh, so in other words, he was the Rich Rubino of the WWF?
Yes, he was. Same curly hair.
Yeah, pretty much. Could you see him doing his awesome libertarian independent debates with a with his jacket tie?
I think I need to start telling weekly Rich Rubino stories leading up to a big appearance by John where we just talk all about him.
Oh, boy. What a great tag team. What do you think of this tag team, Rich Rubino and Adam Murray?
Well, John, I told John he should take Rubino on Hannity with him, and he said he'll have to contact him.
I think it would be tremendous. I would definitely watch it at that point.
You'd have the libertarian, and then you'd have the super conservative John.
That's right. And then the two of them could gang. Well, no, they probably all agree, depending on what the topic was. Unless you had Ron Paul on. But there was a weird thing here. I don't know why they tried to do this. Maybe because, this was back when Vince was trying to counter everything the Crockett's were doing. So they said, oh, he was a big heel down there. Let's make him a big baby face here and try and make him a huge star. Problem was, they were both wrong.
Yeah. This guy, a blander guy. I think he was very good. He reminds me a lot of Terry Taylor. Someone very good in the ring, sound technician. He's not going to light the world on fire, but he's not going to have too many bad matches. Just didn't really ever seem to click. I think maybe his ceiling was just upper mid-card heel, as he would go on to become later when he went back to WCW. But yeah, I don't get it. And, a 6.5-minute match for Sharp is technically fine, but nothing really is going to, get the show up and running in any way.
Right. Yeah. So he takes on Iron Mike Sharp. Not a bad match. Slightly under 6.5 minutes. Nothing fancy. Nothing great either.
Sharp got a decent amount of offense, too. It seems like you think they'd be showcasing Slater a little bit more here, but Sharp actually controls for a little bit.
I used to love this match. I liked the commentary situation because the one thing that I loved Gorilla did with Johnny V is you would always get Johnny V fired up literally for no reason. Like Gorilla, it was almost like an inside rib, and he would start like getting Johnny V going literally for something totally stupid, and then he started like ranting and raving like a lunatic. It was a highlight of whenever those two worked together. Surprised Jesse wasn't. I wonder, was he working on a movie maybe? Was this the summer that they were doing Predator?
You would think
Jesse would have been on this show. Very weird.
Maybe he couldn't travel to Canada.
maybe he had some issues. Yeah, I'm surprised because this would seem like his kind of show.
Let's see. It came out in 87. Came out in June 87. So there's a good chance they were filming. Let's see if it says when they started. Little Carl Weathers.
Great movie. Just watched it while back on Netflix. It
was picked up in 85 by 20th Century Fox.
Went what was?
Casting.
The rights? Oh, okay.
Yeah. Second week of 86 began filming in the jungle. April 86. Second week of April 86.
Okay.
So there's a chance they were still maybe
They must still have been filming. Because, you figure big show, hot crowd. You figure Jesse would have been there.
Mm.
Weird. Yeah, this is a strange match because it's not a bad match if you're just looking at it strictly from a in-ring perspective. But again, Dick Slater probably should have been a heel. Probably should have been an evil Southerner. Should have kept him a heel as dirty as he was in NWA. But again, Vince had that philosophy back then of wanting to do the opposite of whatever the Crockett's did. So his philosophy probably was, look, they made him an awesome heel. I'm going to make an even better babyface. And I don't think Vince totally realized that in this instance, probably not the right way to go. You probably could have made him an even better heel. And so it didn't work, and he didn't stick around too long, and it was pretty much gone. The thing that stuns me here, JR, is I can't believe Iron Mike Sharp was here till 1995.
Oh, yeah. I don't think he was doing much on TV past maybe like 91, 92.
Maybe he was just doing filling house shows, probably.
No, I think it was TV stuff, just on and off, probably whenever they were maybe in the area, northeast or whatever, he'd show up for job duty. But I think it was mainly like through 92-ish when I remember him being on pretty regularly through 92 as a jobber.
Right. Right. Okay. And he gets the win, does a top rope elbow. Someone else does that too. Gets the win in about 6.5 minutes. Again, nothing really earth-shattering. Another filler match to get a character over. And it really
according to Graham, he wrestled twice in 95. Once in West Virginia, once in Binghamton, New York. Somebody they called him in for needed a guy. Maybe he was just hanging around.
Maybe. All right. Our next match.
Looks like 94 he's on.
Wow.
Like a dozen times, maybe.
Yeah, must have been just one of those guys that was loyal to Vince, and you know.
Yeah, that's it. Whenever they come around and he wanted a payday, they'd bring him in.
Bring him in, yeah. Loyal guy.
44 times in 93. So, yeah, 93 looks like it was his last main run.
Hmm. Interesting. And Dick Slater gets the win, but he was not over nearly at all.
No.
So, all right. Finally, we get a match with some, you know, with a little juice in it. A
little pizzazz.
A little pizzazz. A little zang.
A little something.
A little shock. A little something. Some shock in the wall. Six-man tag action here. The Brain, Bobby Heenan. You already know who Bobby is. We're not going to get into his background. And JR's first, well, obviously wasn't watching at the time, but
in when my he was heart, watching, I knew at the time.
In your heart, you knew that this is one of your first favorite Haas tag teams. Big John Studd, one of my favorite heels early on. And King Kong Bundy, fresh off his loss at WrestleMania 2 in the cage. Taking on...
Well, that didn't surprise me a bit because Lou Albano is a big, fat, sloppy pig.
It would be great if he was able to say it live, and he just did.
Yes.
Of course, talking about Captain Lou and these two other guys called the Machines.
Hmm.
Who are they? JR, give us a little background on the Machines.
All right, we got a whole lot going on here. So let's do the storyline, then we'll talk about the guys under the masks. In April of 86, Jack Tunney suspended Andre the Giant for failing to compete in a tag team match against Studd and Bundy. At the petitioning of Bobby Heenan, Tunney said, all right, we're going to suspend you. You didn't fill your contractual obligations. In reality, Andre was actually competing in Japan and was finishing filming The Princess Bride. 2 months later, vignettes began airing, promising the debut of a new tag team known as the Machines, managed by the Sloppy Pig himself. In their promos, they vowed to prove that they were the greatest tag team in the world. It was obvious that the giant machine, one of the machines, was Andre under the hood, but the announcers insinuated it could be anyone, including even Giant Baba from Japan. Heenan began campaigning and claiming Andre was under the mask and trying to circumvent a suspension. Tunney vowed that if that were true, he would be permanently suspended if they found out. He needed the proof, though. On 8/23, the Machines made their TV debut with Super Machine wrestling a singles match while Giant watched from the outside with Bobby Heenan sneaking around and taking photos to prove his point. Shortly after, injuries forced Andre to the sideline, so Albano introduced the Big Machine, a third member of the group portrayed by Blackjack Mulligan. Now, Scott, we have 8/23 that made their debut. But when was this show? This was...
8/28.
Was it really that soon before, between...
Well, maybe I have to double check that. What I want to say was maybe like 7/23.
Well, 6/86 we saw. Well, let's see here. A lot of promos for July vignettes. Yeah, no, I think it was 8/23.
Wow, so
Super Machine
recent.
Defeated Tiger Chung Lee.
Okay. All right, let's rip off the guys here.
Actually, it looks like 8/16.
All right, so like a couple weeks.
Yeah, it wasn't much before.
Maybe 8/23 was when it aired. Maybe 8/16 was the...
Yeah, so you know Andre, he's Giant Machine. We have Big Machine, right?
Yes.
Is
Mr. Robert Windham. Of course, we all know who that is. Actually, we'll talk about him because I don't think we've ever actually brought him up. So Robert Windham, standout college football star, wrestled and played football in Texas. Started getting wrestling. He was in the NFL briefly, trained in Texas, made his debut in 1967. And over the next couple of decades, he would go bouncing across the country. He was in the AWA, was in Crockett, he was in WWF. He was Blackjack Mulligan. In fact, he was one half of the World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champions in the 70s with the Blackjacks, he and Blackjack Lanza. And, of course, he had a couple of very popular sons. Of course, he is the father of... future WWE Hall of Famer and Four Horsemen and Tag Team Champion and NWA Champion, Barry Windham, and younger son, Kendall Windham, although he and Kendall had a different kind of hobby they shared.
Yes. Well, Kendall also enjoyed purging after meals, judging by
yes,
spindly nature of his frame.
Bonier than Sam Houston. I think they both were putting puke buckets in the closet. But.
And, of course, they also enjoyed... counterfeiting money. But you think Kendall used to... I'm not going to... so gross, I'm going to say. Regurgitated his food into the mouth of Adrian Adonis like a mother bird.
Oh, God. Hopefully not on camera. Oh, God. I don't know either. He's in Florida at the moment, Lex Luger. All right. The other machine, we're not going to get into him because we've already mentioned him when we talked about his future debut, but that's Bill Eadie. Wrestled in Detroit in the 70s. Don DeHood, he was the mass superstar. He would stop in NWA, Georgia, WWF through 86 when he signed an official contract up here in New York. And he would maintain his infamous mask, but was the super machine. And of course, might as well just say it, he would of course be the future Demolition Axe.
I think we should make a push for Matt Rotella to become the mass superstar. Might be better off for everyone.
Yes. then there'd be an excuse for him being incoherent because he can't talk through the mask.
Yeah.
What did he say? What did you say? What did he say last night?
What did he say? Everything.
No, what did he say? Crayden.
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 With their point guard, Randy Orton.
Any T's, anything with a T is a D to him.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's like typing of, like I'm sort of or used to. Or he said something. I can't think of what you're supposed to write, but he'll say something of instead of used of. Something like that, but but we all know his writing sometimes leaves a lot to be desired as well. Let's see. So we already talked about Big John Studd. We don't have to get into his background. We talked about Bundy. Yeah, we got into him.
I think they're covered. Studd and Bobby, Bundy and
course,
Bobby.
Bobby we don't have to do, and the Sloppy Pig. Everybody knows the Sloppy Pig. So.
Ugh.
Well, no, wait a minute. Did we do an official Captain Lou?
All right. Captain Lou Albano made his debut in 1953. Young Scott Criscolo in attendance had a little impact on the wrestling scene before joining up in a tag team known as the Sicilians of the Midwest.
Yes.
In 1967, the Sicilians had a brief run as tag team champions in the WWF. By 1969, he hung up his extra-large tights to become a brash, quick-witted, annoying heel manager known as Captain Lou. He had reigned supreme as the heel manager until 1984 when he turned face by siding with pop star Cyndi Lauper in her feud with Roddy Piper. Albano even appeared in Lauper's music video for Girls Just Want to Have Fun. In mid-1986, he was assigned to the Machines to work as the mouthpiece for this mysterious team from the Orient. Let's talk quickly about those vignettes from the Machines. I thought they were really funny. They were like over the top and campy. WWF wasn't always intentionally campy at this time. They took themselves sometimes a little too seriously. So I enjoyed these where they were showing off the Japanese sites and Albano was doing the talking for them. I thought they were pretty well done.
Yeah, no, they were. And, you know, I think they were trying to go so over the top because of the whole, you know, hiding the fact that it was Andre, and they were trying to really push it like crazy, and they succeeded in that. So,
I thought it was a cool angle. I liked it. I thought it was different. I liked that it was still a little bit tongue-in-cheek, and anytime you could frustrate Bobby was always good when he could play that frustrated heel that he knew the truth, but no one else apparently did, and he was always trying to prove it. So I thought that was really well done, and I thought anytime you could have that role is, you know, well played.
Yeah, and, you know, the best is when you know Gorilla's lying, and Gorilla knows he's lying, but he still is, you know, sticking to his guns that he's telling the truth, that it's not Andre the Giant. Andre is being the man that he is, and he's you know, he's serving his suspension like the good guy that he is, and Bobby's like, you're full of crap, and I've got pictures. He used to walk around with a Polaroid and all this other. Oh, it was awesome. It was the first real, like, detail-oriented storyline at this point in history in the mid, heading into the late 80s. And it was, you know, younger fans, they might have gone over their heads a little bit, you know, but, you know, again, at the time, I still think the majority of storyline wrestling was for grownups. I don't think the kids aspect of it really didn't kick in my opinion, until, you know, 87. I mean, obviously the dolls came out, the big rubber guys, but storyline wise, if you're like in sixth grade, you really don't know what the hell is going on here, but,
I mean, I think of Lou Albano whenever I hear this song. It makes perfect sense.
Of course. Because in that video, he was a big, fat, sloppy pig.
Ugh.
I think he had a white tank top with a sauce stain on it, quite honest with you. But
of course he did. I agree with you. I think it was a little bit high concept, and I think that's what made it interesting. And again, it was played for a little bit for comedy, but a little bit for seriousness as well, as to get Andre back in and also to keep him on the sidelines a little bit. He was obviously hurting his back. Was starting to fall apart on him, so it was a good way to keep him on every side and playing along with the angle. You know, you had a Bobby out there trying to take pictures of him to prove who he was, and a lot of cool stuff like that. And here he is at ringside as well. He doesn't compete in this match. He interferes, draws the DQ. The heat for this match was off the charts. I mean, the crowd was maniacal for this. I couldn't believe how into the feud and match they were. Go 7.5 minutes, and you don't even get a full finish, but they. It was great. I mean, they didn't have to do much. They really didn't. They could, you know, work as slow pace as they wanted and just play to the crowd, and the crowd just ate out of the palm of their hands on this one.
Yep. You would have managed Stud Bundy.
Oh, I would have loved managing Stud Bundy. I would have had him sit on that fat pig.
I think you would have screamed at it in the camera. He's nothing but a big, fat, sloppy pig. You and Jesse could have cut promos together. Oh, it would have been awesome. So there you go. The Machines. Well, actually, no, they get the win. Bobby, Stud and Bundy get the win by DQ because...
And I like, too, by the way, how the goal of the match was Bobby trying to unmask the Machine. So, like, that was their main goal,
right.
You know what I mean? So they weren't even really caring, it seemed like, about winning. They were really just trying to get the masks off.
Right. And it was interesting, interesting philosophy. But, again, like you said, the crowd, I mean, this is the first big match of the night in terms of real heat and storyline behind it. The crowd was eating it up because it is Bobby's guys. It's Bobby's guys. And
don't forget, too, I mean, this storyline seems, you know, kind of harmless here, but it plays a major role heading into our next WrestleMania.
Yes, absolutely. Very much so. Okay. We're going to take a break because Cindy's singing in the background. Captain Lou's putting the sauce away. And when we come back, we still got plenty of great matches here on the big event live from Toronto, August 28th, 1986. We have a world title match to talk about. We got a great match to kick off the second half of the show next. I think that's our only title match. I don't think there's any of the title matches. No, it's the only title match on the show. A couple of guys that really shocked me weren't on here. We'll get to that a little bit later. But yeah, when we come back, we've got a match of animals and, of course, World Wrestling Federation Championship on the line as well. Right now, though, a word from our many very gracious sponsors. Because...
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What I'd like to have right now.
Chad, do you ever feel that the world revolves around WWF?
I think you mean WWE there, Barf.
Yeah, whatever, but what about David Crockett?
He likes it!
Well, what about Jimmy Valiant?
I'm gonna get you all until I get you, Paul Jones. Ooh.
The Four Horsemen.
We are a family, and we are the best.
The Omni, the Dangerous Alliance.
Please welcome the newest members of the Dangerous Alliance, Arn Anderson and Larry Zbysko.
Jim Cornette and the Midnight Express.
The Fantastics are putting the U.S. Tag Team title on the line against the Midnight Express.
Main events with actual work rate in them.
Woo! 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 All right!
It's just not fair to Flair.
It's not fair for Flair.
If this is what you're looking for, please check out Where the Big Boys Play podcast, the only pure NWA and WCW supercard podcast out there.
While you were in Hollywood making movies, Thunder Lips, I was winning world titles.
So a guy from across the pond and a dude from the south, Where the Big Boys Play. It's a great podcast. Harv and Chad are awesome. Check them out. Also check out WrestleChat.net, indeed where it's at. Great message board, plenty of topics to browse, the Still Real to Us podcast, and much, much more. Also, our message board, which is awesome, Bigelow34.proboards.com. It's where PTB really began. Written reviews and a boatload of them. And PTB Nation, we have you to thank for that. Plus the territory wars, a whole lot more. If you want a one-touch spot for our show, you can head there. Also head to Stitcher.com and the Stitcher app for all phones and tablets, and more details on that. Also, our good friend Graham Cawthon, historyofwwe.com, the best research site you will ever find. Also, another sponsor to the show, the Wrestling Forum, twfnews.com, their Wrestling Forum, a blog site, much, much more. The guys at TWF creating a wrestling media nation, many blogs, podcasts, and vodcasts. Yours could be included in the official forum of WrestleChat.net and the place to be. We've joined up as well. So check them out, find out what they're about at twfnews.com. Also, you can check out our show at GetThePointRadio.com, my good friend Mike. It's a great online radio station. If you're not in the mood for wrestling, but you want to listen to music, pop it on. He plays music all day long. But you can also check his archive on iTunes, and all of our shows are there as well. Big site.
This is J.J. Dillon, the leader of the Four Horsemen, and you're listening to Place to Be Podcast.
about. We'll see.
So, all right, I'm ready whenever you are.
I'm already recording. We are back here.
Woohoo!
Place to Be Podcast, reviewing the big event, your Pick Your Vintage Vault request.
Yep.
Halfway through the show. Got a few more big matches still to come here.
Yes. Yeah, they definitely split this card in half. The undercard, you know, reminded me of wanting a meal at Kowloon's. But as long as Sloppy Pig was not paying the bill, since he was probably eating 3/4 of the food. What a great website, by the way. Even if you haven't eaten there, just go to the, just type Kowloon's.
A lot of Kowloon's plugs tonight. I have to pick them up as a sponsor.
I know. Kowloons. They've been a staple in what is it, Central Mass. Really good food. They got that old school, like, mafia, you know, Polynesian tiki kind of look. And again, it means a lot to me and JR because we got to hang out with some really cool guys the night we were there, and it was the last, you know, time we got to see, you know, the great Paul Bearer in person. So, yeah, that was, what was it? That wasn't this past fall. It was the year before, right? October 11?
Yeah, definitely was.
Yeah, October 11, yeah. So, check it out, Kowloon's in, Saugus? Right, Saugus on the Post Road?
I think it's so. Saugus. Yeah, I know I drove by it again when we went up there for a party, and I was like, oh, hey, look, it's Kowloon's.
Yeah, I think it's Saugus. Yeah, it's got pictures of old, like, their old matchbooks and their old menus. It's a cool site, Kowloon's. I don't know the exact website. I don't want to say it's kowloons.com, but it's Kowloons. It's just known because it's just a legendary place for wrestlers to eat after shows.
Yep.
And there's, you know, wrestling
it's the garden
pictures.
Or wherever they always end up there.
Yeah, exactly. Pictures. Oh.
You can't win a World Series.
I wonder if he was there. You want some Kung Pao chicken? How about it?
My buddy Bucky Dent says hello.
All the way he goes, hello.
Right out of Seinfeld. Hello. If he threw a la la la, it would have been awesome.
Oh, God.
My buddy Bucky Dent says hello. La la la.
I don't know if they let him in Kowloon's, to be quite honest with you. He had a menu from Kowloon's, but he couldn't bend over to pick it up.
He probably tried signing sign the menus and sell them.
You know, I left tickets for Bill Buckner, but he couldn't bend over to pick them up. Man, how about it?
Oh, God. I never realized how much I love that skit till we did that vault. It's just so awesome. What a fucking asshole. And now he's coming up again. He's coming up again. We won't say when. We've not seen the last of Pete Rose here on the Place to Be podcast. All right, next up, we have another match with a really red-hot blood feud here. Maybe the hottest feud, well, next to the main event, probably the hottest feud in the promotion at the time. And I don't think that's exaggerating. The Dragon, Ricky Steamboat, fresh off his WrestleMania 2 win over Hercules Hernandez, taking on a guy fresh off his WrestleMania 2 win over George Wells, and that was the Snake, Jake Roberts. And this was a Snake Pit match. Whatever the hell that was. I'm trying to remember what the hell that even meant. Of course, this was a memorable. We already talked. We both know who Jake and Steamboat are, so we're not going to get to that. But
I'm pretty sure Snake Pit was just meant to be like no DQ or whatever.
Yeah, most likely. On the May 3rd, Saturday night's main event, this is where it really got started. In a match between these two, it ended in no contest. They were outside the ring, and Jake Roberts, I was stunned when I watched this. He DDT'd Steamboat on the exposed concrete. There was no padding. This was right on the concrete, and it was flush. And you saw Steamboat's head go boink. And Jake mentions it in his DVD that, he was out. I mean, he was out.
Hello!
Incidentally, JR, piece of trivia. Do you know where that DDT was dropped?
The very place that Vincent Council will be dribbling the ball tomorrow night.
Yep.
Providence Civic Center.
The PCC, yep, the future dunk. Jake then unleashed Damien on Steamboat before officials could come and break things up, eventually wheeling Steamboat out on a stretcher because Steamboat was the greatest at selling injuries. It always looks like he lost a limb. On the 5-3 Championship Wrestling, the live one, of course, that Saturday's main event was taped. Steamboat assaulted Roberts after a match. The two would continue to battle across the country. Apparently, my brother went to a couple of house shows in this region, and he said the matches were really good.
Oh, yeah.
They were tearing it up.
Definitely believable.
I think he saw, let me see.
I mean, and this, while you're looking that up, I mean, this definitely was a natural fit of a feud, not just because of the reptile stuff with the, you know, dragon and the snake, but two guys had very similar body types at this point. One was a great heel, one was a great face. So it just made sense. You pair them up, similar style, similar look, similar gimmick, and almost mirror images of each other at this point. So I thought it was really cool that they hooked them up for a feud, and they obviously went all out. You know, Jake with the mind games and the vicious attacks, and Steamboat with the selling and the fired up comebacks. And I thought the match itself was a perfect kind of synopsis of their feud, with Steamboat kind of stealing the win after Jake pummels him throughout the match.
Yeah, I'm kind of panning down, seeing where the feud started in wrestling Morocco. He was beginning at 86. Steamboat was still working that feud with Morocco, the whole ninja, you know, martial arts feud, till Morocco realized he couldn't move anymore. Let's see, man, going into March, May. May 13th, Championship Wrestling, Body Press 248. During the bout, it was, here we go. Jake Roberts, this is the May 13th Championship Wrestling taping in Poughkeepsie. Jake pinned Rick Hunter with a DDT at 418. During the bout, Ricky Steamboat joined Vincent Bruno for commentary. And after the bout, Steamboat attacked Roberts, had to be held back by the referee. So mm-hmm. that got that kicking. There was a flower shop taped that episode where Jake Roberts started bad-mouthing Steamboat. But Landover, Maryland, the Met Center, Minneapolis, out in L.A.
Yeah, they went right around the circuit, man.
MSG in May 19th of 86. Trying to see if there's any close here.
And, too, I mean, the Jake DVD is a good piece to pick up if you're looking for stuff on this feud. I don't remember the Steamboat DVD had a lot on it. I'm sure
I think it had a little bit.
That,
yeah, it had a little bit, but, yeah, Jake definitely.
They focused a lot on it. Because I remember that was the first time I'd seen, because the Jake DVD came out right towards the beginning of when 24/7 was really getting going, at least for me anyway. And I remember that being the first time my eyes were really open to that feud. And I was like, oh, wow, because I had heard about it. And you'd always seen the pictures with Steamboat with the, you know, alligator or whatever the fuck was supposed to be a dragon that he'd bring out and combat the snake. But I never actually seen about the feud and the matches. So, I think the match with the DDT should also be on that Saturday Night's Main Event DVD set, I believe, as well. So anyway, a great feud and a great match. Really one of the highlights of this show. And if you haven't seen much about that feud, you should look it up and check it out, because it's really a cool one, kind of lost in the annals of 86.
Yep. June 2nd, 86, there was a house show at New Haven Coliseum. My brother definitely went to that one and saw those two wrestle. The June 3rd Poughkeepsie taping is the one that you just mentioned where Steamboat brought out the Komodo Dragon. So it was, yeah, this feud had been brewing for months. And, you know, it came out, I mean, he wrestled in all Houston and just all over the place. Just big time feud.
And this, of course, was pretty much Jake's last heel feud as a heel. I mean, he'd have the stuff with Hogan right before he turns face, but this is really his last major feud as a heel before he turns face in 87. So, crowd just got behind him too much, especially in the, you know, the feud with Hogan is very short-lived because Jake was being, as the story goes, they were out-popping Hogan on the house shows. I think he talks about that in the DVD, too, that he was such a fan favorite.
Yeah.
And our buddy Jim actually saw that in Providence, that match. It was the first show he ever went to.
Which one?
Hogan and Jake.
Oh, wow. So he was what? What, eight?
No. Probably would have just turned six.
Six or seven? Wow. Look at that, huh? Crazy.
I'm trying to find it on here. Right here. December 30th, 86. Hogan beat Jake by countout. Because I remember he showed me the program.
Wow. That's crazy. This is a very good match. My opinion, match of the night. Both guys just had such chemistry, but it's Ricky. I mean, when does he not have chemistry with somebody?
Yeah. You know? Especially in the mid-80s.
Yeah, exactly. And no knock on Jake here. And this is before Jake started imbibing, as we say. I'm sure he was having a share of scotch shots and cigarettes. But
oh, yeah.
He didn't really get to the heavy stuff for at least another, probably 2 or 3 years. He was trim, looking good. It was just a good match.
Yep.
It was a great match. And it really, I think, just as much to elevate. I mean, obviously, the company had a plan for Steamboat. But they probably had a plan for both guys. I mean, this was definitely a match forwarding both guys' careers easily.
Mm-hmm.
There was no accidents here. I mean, there was a plan in place with these two. And Steamboat gets the win with a sunset flip. And then I think the feud kept going for a while. And then Steamboat, of course, later in 86 would start a feud.
Yeah, I think it lingers on a little bit. I don't think it's too much past this. I feel like they blew it off on a Starry's main event.
Yeah. And then, of course, obviously Steamboat would start a feud with someone else who was very conspicuously absent on the show. And as JR mentioned, Jake would kind of siphon on to other guys throughout the fall. Okay, next up is a match that I think may shock a lot of you because you're probably wondering that this feud started this far back. And that is the match between Hercules. I believe at this point he dropped the Hernandez.
And just to quickly finish that off, it was Siren's main event on October 4th, 86. Okay. Steamboat pinned Jake in a snake pit match, 619.
Okay.
And that's where he had the dragon with him as well. So
there you go. Just an awesome feud. Good match there. And, of course, good things on the horizon for both men. Again, Hercules, I believe Hernandez has been dropped. Of course, he had
still had the look, though. He still had the gladiator stuff and the big curly afro.
Yeah.
And Scott, since we've been talking so much NIT tonight, I must announce that Robert Morris hung on to beat Kentucky.
No!
By two. Kentucky came back and tied it. Robert Morris had a great play down low, got a layup, and then they got fouled just now to take a two-point lead. Kentucky missed a three at the gun. So if your Providence Friars win tomorrow night, the week after at the Ryan Center in Kingston, Robert Morris will come in because the dunk will be taken.
Can you think you can walk through that building?
I'll have to see what night it's on if I go. But
oh, wow. What a win for the fuck are their nicknames?
Colonials
of Robert Morris.
Also, St. John's beat St. Joe's by one to catch you up.
Yeah, I heard that was good. That was gonna be a pretty good game. Tomorrow, Fairfield plays in one of those dumpster tournaments, the SIT, I think, or one of those really bad tournaments. All right, good for Robert Morris, and this is a big opening for you guys. Big opening. If I was our man Ed Cooley, I would pump those fuckers up and go in there tomorrow night and get the job done. Now you get a home game. Come on. A home second-round game. Do you realize that? That would mean I think you'd be one win away. Never mind. Okay. His opponent, newcomer, not newcomer to the business, but a newcomer to WWF, and that is the Oregonian himself, Billy Jack Haynes, who just, 8 months earlier was one half of the United States Tag Team Champions with Wahoo McDaniel, would lose those belts to the iconic Ole and Arn Anderson at Starrcade 85, and then he would leave and come here. And I don't remember where I read this. Probably it was one of his Coke binges, but he never always wore Billy Jack Haynes.
God. It was probably during one of his – I like you to slip that in. Probably during one of his Coke binges.
If you've read his shoot interviews, he's got to be on something.
No, he's nuts. He is nuts.
He didn't wear the gold and green, University of Oregon colors. He always wore normal colors when he was in NWA. Vince made him wear that with a freaking leprechaun hat and all that other jazz.
And this match was just friggin' long. I mean, it was a long 6 minutes. It felt like 25. I mean, it just went on, and they plotted around, and there's some audio issues here. Gorilla says that Ladd and Valiant are gone from the booth to get some drink. Get some drinks and food, and then the audio drops out altogether, and it's just 5 minutes of the crowd booing these guys as they lumber around. And
oh, God.
It's not a good showing at all. And then I was actually surprised we got a clean finish for once. Billy Jack won with a backslide. It's also during this match show we found out officially that Slick has assumed all of Freddie Blassie's charges, including Hercules.
Yes.
So Blassie is now retired. But, not much going on here. Just two guys that have seen better days, and Hercules would improve, but at this point, just not much going on.
Yeah, it's not very good. Obviously, this is off the Coliseum video, and you could definitely tell Gorilla sounds like he's in a booth now. He's in a sound booth post-production. Certainly not at the CNE Arena, so something must have definitely happened on site. This match is not very good. These guys would definitely pick it up, though, on the house show circuit.
I mean, their WrestleMania match would be much better than this debacle.
So it's pretty bad. So Billy Jack Haynes wins, complete with his gold tights and leprechaun hat. So next up, Another awesome tag team match. Very good tag team match here with two awesome tag teams, two PTB favorites. A lot of awesome in this match. The aforementioned Dream Team, your former World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champions, the Hammer, Greg Valentine, and the Brutai, Brutus Beefcake, of course, losing the straps in Chicago back in April to the British Bulldogs.
Yep.
Great match. Taking on another one of JR's early prepubescent J-faves. That is, of course, it's one of their first matches. Shock, Raymond, the Fabulous Rougeaus.
Right, the son of legendary Canada wrestler and promoter, Canadian wrestler and promoter, Jacques Rougeau Sr., Jacques Jr., and Raymond began teaming up in Montreal in the late 1970s, had a very successful run in their home promotion, and then headed to the States, signed up, and hooked up with the WWF in February of 86. So, I think they've been around. Were they at the Mania 2 Battle Royal?
Let me check Graham Cawthon's The History of WWE.com, and so I have 1986 open. Let me go back to April 7th.
They may not have been. But anyway, yeah, I like this team. You know, of course, they'll be known to love them as the great heel dicks that they'll become. But here, they're kind of just a plucky underdog face team along the lines of the Killer Bees and the Young Stallions. And a team that had great work rate, good brotherly mindset, so worked well together. And
They were not the Battle Royal.
They did debut, though, in February, so they've been around for a while.
Yeah, but they were not the Battle Royal.
Okay. Anyway, so I like this match. I like the Dream Team. I thought they were a very good unit. Of course, former champions. They'd only be together for a couple more months after this, but I thought Valentine has really helped Beefcake grow in the ring. We saw him as a solo back in 85 and just was not very good, and by this point now, he really had understood how to work a match, and him and Valentine were just a good unit, and you know, Valentine really, I thought, just taught him a lot of the psychology in the ring as well as pacing. And that shows, yes, I think, some of Beefcake's work. So I like this. This is a typical, you know, small, gutty underdog, smaller team against the big, just guys that beat you down into the mat. And I thought it was well worked. 15 minutes they go. And it definitely felt, it felt like less like 15 than the match before it did. And that was only 6. But
yeah,
I dug this match. Did you like it?
I loved it. I love both teams. The Rougeaus were a breath of fresh air for the tag division. And, you know, I'm a Dream Team mark like my brother was. And the funny thing about this is where Gorilla, this is the one chink in Gorilla's armor as a play-by-play guy. Raymond gets the pin. Greg Valentine gets pinned with a sunset flip. But Raymond is not the legal man of the ring. Do you think Gorilla would even make a point to say that? No! Who cares? They won! Of course, it was the tide was turned.
Right.
You know, we'd be getting investigations and let's call Jack Tunney and paperwork and all this other jazz. But if the baby faces went, who gives a shit? Nobody's paying attention anyway. And so that was the best thing about Gorilla. Just deflect it all. But yeah, tremendous match. You know, JR, I was just thinking that I don't think you have two favorite types of tag teams in the time I've known you. You love French Canadian teams, and yes, you love Haas tag teams.
And Russians.
But there's never been. Well, you can't have both Russians and French. Well, I guess you could. But there's never been a French-Canadian-Russian Haas team. Imagine like 450-pound French-Canadian guys.
There's going to be one out there somewhere that we're just not aware of, I'm sure. I'm sure we'll hear about it. But yes, there must have been some team in Montreal that was,
yes,
Montreal promotions. That were,
and you would have managed them.
Beastly Haases.
Yes, and you would have managed them.
Of course.
Yeah, no, great match, seriously. Mm. Two really good tag teams.
I've yet to really see a bad Rougeaus match in the WWF.
Honestly, I agree with you. There really isn't. I mean, as a matter of fact, house shows, challenge matches that were on primetime. Jacques and Raymond always brought the goods, just like the Killer Bees earlier in the show. These young, you know, exciting aerial tactician teams were really trying to make a name for themselves. And you almost thought at the time that these teams were kind of ahead of the Hart Foundation. I don't want to say it was an upset when the Hart Foundation would eventually beat the Bulldogs early 87 to win the tag titles.
Kind of was. It was definitely positioned that way.
Yeah. These other teams really were kind of higher on the depth chart. There weren't a lot of, I mean, other than, you probably saw the top two heel teams at this show, the Dream Team.
Yeah.
And Bundy and Stud. Really. It wasn't really until early 87 that the Hart Foundation really took, you know, kind of took a, became a force and picked their spot and won the straps.
Yeah, and the Dream Team was starting to fade a little bit. So yeah, the tag division is a little, kind of a weird position right now.
Yeah.
I'll definitely agree with you there.
But of course, within a year or so, they would. I mean, the division would load up like crazy.
Oh, yeah, of course. By 87, 88, it's out of control. But the Rougeau's a team that we've discussed before as being, I think, historically underutilized during this stretch in the WWF. I thought they could have done a lot more, especially during this time here. But this wasn't meant to be. And you almost wonder if they would have been better off than Strikeforce in that run in 87. But it's another story for another day.
Yes, exactly. So the Rougeaus get the win. Kind of an upset. Ray Rougeau, not the legal man, pins the hammer with a sunset flip just under 15 minutes. Next on our list, on our match here at the big event in Toronto, a match between two guys that...
PTB Nation, it is now time for the Rob Houston Memorial Hacksaw Jim Duggan update.
I got my 2x4, 2x4.
I couldn't make his ass a real man.
Vince Kennedy McMahon Jr. here along with the Queen Bee with their Jim Duggan update. Hey, Chris Colo, do you know where Duggan was in 1986 in August?
Wasn't working here, thank God.
He was down in Mid-South giving hand jobs to the transvestite bitch Edith Watts, trying to get a push.
Pretty much.
That's why he's cross-eyed, you know. He took a shot in the eye. It was never the same.
Oh, I thought he was born that
Edith
way.
Edith couldn't control things. What?
I got a question for you, Vince. Where the hell was Randy Savage on this show?
Don't worry about it. That old fat bitch Edith Watts better sell me her fucking tape library. I'm going to send my piece of shit Shane down there to take care of business.
And why the hell did you have Lou Albano on the roster? You like big jacked up guys. Why'd you have fat sloppy pigs on the roster?
I'll send him down there and chop her fucking penis off. Speaking of fat sloppy pigs, Crusoe, remember when me, you, and David San Martino were hanging out in the 80s, hanging and banging? We'd be hitting bars, snorting coke off of hookers, banging those Canadian sluts.
It was awesome. Love those days.
Remember that remember that fucking mulleted eunuch nerd Meltzer sitting in the corner scratching his balls, writing down star ratings for shit no one cares about?
Yeah, well, that other guy, the guy for PWI was taking pictures. He better not have those anymore.
Oh, I'm Dave Meltzer. Steve Yoffi and Jim Brazil had a 20-minute Broadway up in Toronto, and it was only 1.5 stars. Shut up your ass, you fucking pussy. Come bump a line off Velvet McIntyre's ass with me and Chris Colo. That's how you get it done in the 80s.
Hell yeah.
Not right here, you fucking rags. Who gives a shit how many stars? I got fucking 5 stars for you right here, you piece of shit. Now bend the fuck down so I can knock you on your ass.
It's a pleasure to see you, Vince. Pleasure as always. Keep banging and banging.
I got Velvet in the car. I'm out of here, bitch.
You ain't licking this. You ain't sticking this. And I got witnesses. Ask any nigga I've been with. They ain't hit shit till they suck their tongue in this. I ain't with that front and shit. I got my own Vince.
Eat my pussy right.
It was actually quite, it was quite giddy. I think that's a giddy Vince. That's a giddy Vince. Oh, so I guess those stories that Billy Jack Haynes told were true. Shh. Okay. There were no 12-year-olds, though. I don't know where he got that from.
But, you said 12-year-olds.
Oh, remember Billy Jack Haynes said that, those stories.
Vince said it.
Vince had 12-year-olds in the limo and
that's the first time, I've always been worried when Vince shows up. First time I got a text from my wife asking what's going on.
She's probably wondering who Velvet McIntyre is.
Why are we doing lines of coke?
Who's this Velvet McIntyre? What's she doing in the man cave?
Oh, my God. I already got enough trouble tonight. My cousin said one of her teacher friends saw our pictures from Saturday night and asked if I was single. So I texted her back and asked if she was hot. And I'd go over that one.
You dumbass. Oh, God. Oh, Jesus. Should have had Garnett say something. All right.
Good night.
Our next match. If this was 10 years earlier, or even 13 years earlier, this would have been the main event, and it would have sold another 15,000 tickets or whatever. The place would have been totally sold out. We have a former World Wrestling Federation champion and a former NWA World Heavyweight Champion meeting in the ring. That is, of course, Pedro Morales and the King, Harley Race. We don't have to go over both. Well, we won't go over Harley Race. We did that at WrestleMania 3.
Yeah.
But we will go over Pedro Morales. I'll take care of this. He began his career on the West Coast in the late 50s, 1959, competed against the major regional stars of the era, eventually winning the WWA heavyweight title, moved on to the WWF in 1970. He won the heavyweight title from Ivan Koloff in 71 after that huge upset in December when he defeated Bruno Sammartino to end the eight-year reign. He have a successful reign. He would catch on with the heavy Puerto Rican fan base in New York City. New York City very ethnic, of course. Already the Italian fan base was jacked up with Bruno, so they decided to get the Hispanic and Puerto Rican fan base going with Pedro as champion. He would have an epic showdown with Bruno at Shea in 72. That was the first time like we had kind of a face-to-face meeting there. The match ended in a 75-minute draw. 75 minutes. Pedro dropped the title to Stan Stasiak in December, and then Bruno would win it back. He'd fade from the promotion. He traveled to various territories throughout the U.S. Puerto Rico. He'd come back to the WWF 7 years later in May of 1980, won tag team gold with Bob Backlund while Backlund was still world champion. Morales set his sights on the only title he had yet to win. He accomplished that goal on December 8th, 1980, the day after you were born, JR.
Crazy. I was still in the hospital. My little cap on.
With your little Jets cap, defeating champion Ken Patera pre-Creamy Legs. With the win, Morales became the first Triple Crown winner. He would briefly lose the title to Don Morocco, then he win it back. First two-time IC champ, 14-month reign as IC champion, and then Morocco would end the reign in early '83. He would kind of split his time between WWF and WWC, which is of course Carlos Colon's promotion in Puerto Rico. Eventually would settle in the lower mid-card, put over rising stars for McMahon, make a nice paycheck throughout the end of 87. He would retire, become a Spanish announcer for the company, and would be inducted into the WWF Hall of Fame in Philadelphia in 1995.
Isn't a little funny story for you? When I was born, they had to use the forceps to get me out, and so my head was a little misshapen, and my dad was all freaking out, wondering how I'd wear a baseball hat.
Very interesting. Maybe making sure that you spoke and had, you know, everything else was fine, but it was all about that.
Yes.
Very interesting. Very good. Didn't turn into Norman the Lunatic. who knows? Might have been in a promo. You never know. Maybe you were in Rocky. Maybe you were in the back seat of the car while while your dad's driver said, "I heard retards like the zoo."
Yes, Bob.
okay. Gana. Great match here. You know, I mean, obviously, you know, both guys fairly past their... Well, I wouldn't say...
Yeah, oh, definitely.
I wouldn't say they were past their prime. I mean,
Pedro. I think Pedro was. Harley is kind of like Dory earlier, where even past their prime, they still work a great match. I'd say Harley was on the downside. Right. Pedro, I think, was pretty much done. I mean, he would just job duty for the next year or so before calling it a career. So, yeah, I think Pedro was just about done. Harley... still could go. I mean, he could go into the 90s when he was a manager, so that's fine with me. I like this match. These two just go out there. They know how to work the crowd, and they just beat the shit out of each other. I mean, they don't really need to do much else. And you know, 3.5 minutes, they just go out there and have fun. It's pretty stiff. They fight out on the floor into the table, and Harley ends up stealing the win with a roll-up. And I like this. I could have went for another few minutes of this match.
Yeah, it was only 3.5 minutes.
A lot of energy for two older guys.
Yeah, I was kind of bummed. I was hoping for... I was kind of hoping it would go a little longer, but... But, yeah, it was nice to see these two old hosses who I'm sure wrestled both in their prime. Because, you know, back then, of course, Vince Sr. was in good, you know, was in not bad standing with the NWA by the mid-70s. So I'm sure Pedro and... Before the shock wall went up and the humps came out. And, you know, I know they wrestled... Well, no, that was Harley and Superstar Billy Graham.
Yeah, it's Harley okay. We don't need you to spend another 20 minutes going through Graham's site. So
who again? No, they didn't wrestle. I know they wrestled the Orange Bowl, but that was in the late 70s.
Yeah, and then Harley, you know, of course, they just started the King stuff.
Yep.
I never had a problem with the King stuff with Harley. I thought he played it well. I thought it made it. Did it look a little goofy? Maybe, but they never played it up as goofy. They always played it as legit, that this guy was a king, a legend of wrestling, and I was fine with that.
Yeah, no, I was too. I know the only thing that bugged people was the weird blonde hair. And he shaved that really cool mustache that would, of course, be, you know, would be homaged by Triple H.
And Lemmy.
9 years later. Yeah, 19 years later or whatever.
All right, let's get to the main event.
Yeah, so there you go. Good match. Could have been a little better, and Harley wins. All right, time for the main event, the match that brought everyone here. The only title match of the evening, And that is for the World Wrestling Federation Heavyweight Championship. Your champion, of course, Hulk Hogan, taking on former friend, former enemy, and former friend.
Frenemy.
And now full-blown enemy, Mr. Wonderful, Paul Orndorff, at the time, next to Piper, my brother's favorite wrestler.
Shortly after WrestleMania, Orndorff turned face, was locked in a heated feud with WrestleMania 1, that is, was locked in a heated feud with former ally Roddy Piper. During that time, he aligned and became close friends with Hulk Hogan. They'd offered to act as tag team partners. As time wore on and we got into 86, Orndorff's ego started to get the best of him. And Adrian Adonis started getting in his ear a little bit, messing with his mind. He said Orndorff, he'd call him Hulk Jr. He warned Orndorff that Hogan wasn't really his friend, even daring him to prove it. So in a test, Orndorff tried to call Hogan, but a representative answered and said Hogan was too busy training. Orndorff got pissed off. In the first tag match since the incident, Orndorff and Hogan defeated the Moondogs, but Orndorff wrestled the majority of the match and Hogan and picked up the pin trying to upstage Hogan. A week later, the two men collided during a bout with Bundy and Big John Studd. As Orndorff was knocked out on the floor and Bundy and Studd worked over Hogan, he got back in the ring, ran off Bundy and Studd, and then, of course, the iconic moment where he helped Hogan to his feet and then struck him with a clothesline and dropped him with a pile driver, shocking the fans to kicking off one of the hottest heel runs at this point in the WWF. Orndorff hired on Bobby Heenan as his manager that chased Hogan all around the country, even going as far as to wear Hulkamania t-shirts and use the real American theme song, which I thought was really cool. He does that here as well.
My brother
an awesome
that.
Feud, an awesome epic heel turn, one of the first real memorable ones of the modern WWF era, and really just a money-drawing, red-hot banana feud. And, you know, I'm fine here. We can just say it now. They go to a non-finish, 11 minutes. They have a DQ. And you're thinking, well, is that the kind of finish you want to have a big... But this is just a glorified house show at the end of the day. It's not a pay-per-view or any kind of major event. It was just a glorified house show. So I'm okay with the DQ ending because you had to keep this feud going through the rest of the year on the houses. You couldn't beat Orndorff definitively here. So I was cool with that. It's a fine match. I don't think it's anything great. It's a standard Hogan fare. And they work stiff together, as always. Orndorff always hammers away, and Hogan gave some good receipts as well. And I liked it. I thought you could really feel the intensity between these two.
Yeah, and then they did the kind of the dusty moment there where Hogan won by – or Orndorff won by, I guess it was count out or something. And Orndorff had Hogan pinned. The referee was stunned. He got caught in the middle of the action. Crawled over, tapped Orndorff on the shoulder. He thinks he won. Bobby grabbed the belt, put it on him. He was walking around. It was kind of crazy. My brother actually thought he was going to leave with it. And of course, that did not happen, and Hogan rebounds. They don't get a pin, but Hogan wins the match and, of course, gets all the, you know, the his usual post-match pinning or posing and the like. So, it was a great match, and the feud would continue. And, of course, I think I saw live the really hot match between these two, and that was that cage match. In December at the my first ever
live
event.
Yeah, that'd be the culmination.
Yeah, and but this was a good match nonetheless. And Hogan gets the win by DQ. I loved, as much as I was a big, this time I was at the height of my orange Kool-Aid drinking phase, but of course my brother absolutely despised him, loved Orndorff, and he thought that eventually, my brother had that kind of Mid-South thinking where Mid-South NWA thinking where Hogan was going to win this one, but somehow, somewhere over the next few months, Orndorff was going to win the title in like a weird house show finish. Because at the time, you weren't thinking Hogan was going to win hold the belt for, you know, 4 years or whatever. You thought it was going to get to a point where, and I think Orndorff would have been a great, obviously we all know what would eventually happen at WrestleMania 3, and we're all good that it did, but I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't have been surprised if Orndorff had won the title, at some kind of house show thing over the next couple months and then work their way into a WrestleMania match if Andre was not available to do it.
Right. And, you know, as we'll know, Orndorff has actually kept off the Mania 3 card, and you've heard the story, you know, one that they were keeping him available just in case they had to change things. But as it got closer, you think they could have thrown him a bone and put him in a match somewhere along the way.
I know, really. It's very weird. Yeah, I agree. My brother was – I remember we used to talk when I was a kid, and my brother used to think that, he's like, oh, it's, you know, cheap win here for Hogan, but I guarantee you Orndorff's going to win the strap in a month, at Maple Leaf Gardens or some weird event, some weird house show or something, and it never happened. But my brother legitimately thought it was going to happen, but because that's how hot this feud was. And then when we saw the match at in Hartford, my brother thought that was the night he was going to win.
Right.
So when that double thing happened, He was going crazy. They were throwing pretzels at him, and because obviously he was the only Orndorff fan in the building. Well, probably one of a few. But that just tells you how awesome this feud was and how red hot it was. So, but on this night, not a clean finish, but nobody cares. Hogan won, and you know the fans loved it. He did the posing and all of that. So, your overall thoughts on this card, JR? When you first watched it, what did you think?
I enjoyed it. I mean, if you're a fan of that era, you get it all here. I thought it was superior to WrestleMania 2 in my eyes. I thought if this was WrestleMania, you would have had a better show than what we got at WrestleMania 2. I think there's only one match at 2 that's better than anything here, and that's the Dream Team Bulldogs. And maybe you can say Hogan-Bundy, I guess, but I think Hogan-Orndorff surpasses that. And you know, you mentioned it, and we'll talk about it now for a moment. There's a lot of guys here missing. You got your IC champion, Randy Savage. Your tag champions, the British Bulldogs.
Yeah.
Tito Santana.
Yep.
Just to name a few guys. Bundy.
No, it was in the six-man.
Oh, right. Bundy's there. My
Machines.
Bad.
Yeah.
So mainly those guys, I guess those are the three. Savage and Bulldogs are glaring omissions.
Yeah. How are you two-thirds of your champions not there?
Yeah. Why not do a Bulldogs Dream Team rematch here?
Yeah. I mean, make it a cage or something, you know, make something special with it. Well, let me see. According to this, the big event was August 20th. It looks like, I don't know where Savage was, but according to Graham, the tag team champions were at Kemper Arena in Kansas City.
On the same night?
I was
going to say that. You know, when we started discussing that, this was probably still when they were running two cards. So, yeah, they probably had to be there. Was Savage there, too?
He must have been, because the next night, Graham doesn't have the full card, but the next night, August 29th, at Municipal Auditorium in Sioux City, Iowa, Savage fought George Animal Steel.
Okay.
So he was definitely on that Midwest tour. So they probably had to split. Yeah, but this is a big show.
It was.
You know?
But I mean, Hogan Orndorff's enough to draw it. And you get the machine stuff on there. So I think it's okay. I mean, they needed to send a good enough representative down to that other show, the B show. So I think it makes sense that they'd have the other two champs down there.
Yep.
So that explains why they were there.
Yep. And the only match that this is, both matches, two matches that are on DVD, the Jake, as you and I mentioned, the Jake Steamboat DVD match is on the Jake DVD. The Hogan Orndorff match is on both that Hulk Still Rules, that really bad Hogan DVD that came out in 2002.
Yep.
And it's on Hogan's that anthology DVD. So.
Okay.
Yep. So there you go.
So right, it looks like the Hearts were already challenging, because that next night in Iowa, the Hearts challenged the Bulldogs. So it looks like that feud was already up and running.
Yeah. Yep. And they had the Sam Mushnick Memorial Tournament. And at the Kiel Auditorium the next night.
Everyone was back down in the Midwest by then.
Yep.
So.
And Harley, of course, you know, obviously needed to support the Midwest crowd. Harley won the tournament. Wow, Harley Steamboat.
Mm.
How good that match was. Pretty interesting. There you go.
All right. Let's get quickly. We only got a handful of feedbacks here. Okay. I'll kick us off. Corey Mack. We go way back to 86 to tackle the big event. Cool show, lame name. High point, the mere sight of a humongous crowd. Very cool to see that mass of humanity. Low point, the announce seems terrible. Gorilla's the man, but Ernie Ladd and Johnny V are beyond helpless. Extra points. I always hated the machines. Where in the hell is Macho Man? And I've always dug King Tonga versus Morocco.
Okay. Give me a sec. Just waiting for the page to open here. Why don't you do the next one? I'll do the
All
next
right.
Time.
Ryan Schmuck. Good to see this show get reviewed. This show could almost be considered SummerSlam 86. And Wrestling Classic could be Survivor Series 85. Shock, No Bulldogs, George Steele, Volkoff, Sheik, Kershaw, Hilly, Jim, Cousin Luke, Moondogs, Lanny Poffa, Offer Nation, Randy Savage, Moolah, Liz, and other superstars. Coliseum Video chops the show down a little bit, but at least it aired in full on 24/7. I wonder if the show only aired on closed circuit in Canada. Matches are okay. Commentary team sucked except for Monsoon. V flips out after his team loses. Sharp gets booed in Canada against the Rebel. Race beats Morales. He goes through some of the results here. Crowd was huge, but would get shattered by another event months later.
Yes. Ed Harris, interesting show that serves as a nice cross-section of what the WWF had to offer in 1986. It's a pretty solid card overall with a good main event. Hogan and Orndorff always worked well together, and they did. Fun six-man tag, typically good Steamboat Roberts match. Not the greatest show. Commentary team is interesting, but not exceptional, along with one or two rather bland matches. But it's a fun show to look at if you're a fan of the era and a nice precursor to SummerSlam. And Jordan McKinnon, I wasn't even 2 years old. But this card holds special meaning because I was supposed to be there. My parents and my brother had tickets because at that point we went to the CNE every year, and 1986 was no different. However, they opted to leave me at home when the word started to leak out in the days prior to just how large the crowd was going to be, and it was probably for the better. It was an ugly scene from what I've been told. The official story goes that when the Tunnies realized how big the crowd was going to be, they made plans to make sure it was going to be recorded for television. That, along with the late addition of video screens, I'm guessing the first WWF show to include video screens, caused a bunch of seats to be relocated elsewhere on the field. The reality is that they sold more tickets than they ever had planned on, and they had no idea how things would be set up on the field. People ended up furious when they went looking for seats that didn't exist. It had led to fistfights, thrown chairs, and melees with security guards. About 2,000 fans sued the Tunnies for refunds and got them.
Wow, crazy.
Wow, good story, Jordan. The show was recorded but not shown live. It was chopped up and shown on the Canadian WWF Cindies in the weeks afterwards. My brother has said the only things he remembers about that night was how cold it was, so cold the reptiles in the snake pit match couldn't be at ringside. Wow, and it's end of August. The brawls on the field and the size of Andre. Personally, I think the show was the catalyst that led to Vince booking the Silverdome a few months later. Apologies for running on so long, but this is one of the more unique shows in history, and it always gets me rambling on. Jordan, absolutely not. Excellent story.
Yeah, that's awesome. Sure. That's really interesting stuff.
Didn't know that at all.
Cool. Dave Hall, one of my first wrestling memories was Arndorf turning on Hogan, and this is the event of the first big meeting. This feud draws huge. We have an enormous crowd in Canada for this event. The atmosphere looked electric, and it really shows how hot Hogan was. I have only ever seen Hogan-Arndorf match on DVD, but the rest of the card looked pretty average. As for Hogan-Arndorf, it was heated, it was snug, and it was entertaining. In typical old-school booking, we had a DQ finish to try and draw everyone back for a rematch.
And finally, Wade Ferrari, a good show with Hogan-Arndorf, Steamboat Jake, and Rougeau's Dream Team bringing the standard match, standout matches. Kind of strange, although, with that some of the big names at the time, like Savage, Piper, and the Bulldogs, were left. Oh, Piper was on there either, huh?
Mm.
While guys like Ted Arcidi...
Oh, he might. I think he was out. Was he already out?
Yeah, he must have been, because that was the whole premise of the flower shop starting.
Yeah.
He was supposed. They were both heels, and he said, "You know, I'm going on vacation. Can you watch my pit while I'm gone?" And that's what led to the flower shop.
Well, so, it was on September 6th when they announced that he'd be back as Piper's Pit.
Yeah, so he was still on vacation.
That was actually at the Civic Center, that Superstars taping.
Nice. I wonder if he was doing. He had to have been doing. Hell Comes to Frogtown or whatever that first.
He was back at this point, because that was August 26th. They had that taping in Providence, and he was all over that doing the pits and stuff. So.
Oh, okay. All right. Rest of the card. Oh, yeah, I lost my place here. Guys like Ted Arcidi and Mike Sharp were on the card. Gorilla, Johnny V, and Ernie Ladd were an odd pairing as the commentary team, but they ended up being all right, as pretty much anything with Gorilla is entertaining, no matter how bad his partners are. And there is your feedback for the big event. Thank you for the few that did it. Great story, Jordan McKinnon. I'm fascinated by that, because you would thought the Tunnies would have, you know, had their shit together, you know? That's fucked up. Really weird. But thank you, Jordan. Good story.
Yep, and good stuff there. So there is the big event. Finally reviewed it, Scott. I think this is our most requested show ever that people wanted to hear us chat about. So hopefully we lived up to the billing. It was fun, though. I liked getting off our tangential discussions as well. So
yes, and it's kind of nice to be kind of out of the loop of the 90s. Mm. Next week, we'll head back to the Attitude Era.
Oh, yeah, because Monday night, we'll be in Philly for WrestleMania 15.
Yep.
Should be a lot of fun. And then Wednesday, Scott, big night, our old-school WrestleMania Roundtable.
And I have an invitation.
An invitation?
Possibility next week that was given, or an invite that was offered. I know we have a big crew, but...
I don't know. We might be maxed out. This has to be someone really special.
Well, he usually doesn't ask. Usually we invite him, but why don't you let is it a surprise who's going to be on? Did you want to let the listeners know who we're having on, or did you?
May Monday we'll reveal.
Okay, well, I'll let you know who the possibility, the surprise guy is possibly joining us. So,
all right, I think there's like six or seven of us on the show, so we won't be previewing this year's show. We're going to do this the week after. We'll do headlines, but next week we're going to do old school. We're going to talk our favorite memories, Mania matches, and all different kinds of stuff. So there is your next week. That is it for this week, though. We are in the books. Everyone have a great rest of your week. Have a good weekend. Hope you enjoyed the two shows. A little bit different. It was almost like a little break. I feel like we're so hot and heavy with 99 and everything else. It was nice to kind of step back this week and do the basketball and do this show. And then the next 2 weeks, we'll really be right back at it. That Monday of WrestleMania week, we have a cool show planned as well. A couple interviews.
Yes.
One part of it, we can tell you, will be Kevin Kelly to preview the Ring of Honor show. He'll be coming on, so that'll be fun. And then we're doing headlines that Wednesday night before. We're going to preview Mania. Pretty much all Mania, that headline show.
Yes.
Maybe we'll talk a little baseball. Oh, baseball preview too, right? Don't we have that somewhere in there?
We have somewhere. I think it's later on in the week.
So a lot going on these next couple weeks, so always hang with us here on the PTB podcast. Thank you all for being so great to PTB Nation. And remember, get your brackets in. You have a couple days left to do that. Actually, just a day left. You're going to be in by Thursday. So if you want to in on the competition, do that there. And also, remember to join us on the live chats. The chats for Raw are awesome. We had, you know, we averaged almost 400 comments through each episode of Raw. And, we've actually been batting around the idea of maybe throwing on old shows and chatting live. And we all watch the same thing or something like that. Maybe someone links us to YouTube and we all watch the old Raw Nitro. Just kind of different things we're batting around. So a lot of cool stuff going on in the nation. And, of course, if you are attending WrestleMania weekend, if you haven't gotten in touch with me yet, you can. We have a Facebook page for it. Or on the message board, send me a private message and I will give you the schedule. We are collecting cell phone numbers right now so we can all be in touch. And a lot of cool stuff planned. That headline show will go over the final schedule. But we have a lot of stuff going on for Mania weekend. It's only 3 weeks away, Scott. Less than 3 weeks away.
Yeah. Unbelievable. And another guy added to the Hall of Fame. The comment that will bring this up as we go along. A lot of people almost looking forward to the Hall that Saturday night as much as they are Sunday night. But I think we're underestimating Sunday night. We'll talk more about that when we get closer.
I agree. So, all right, let's wrap things up. That's Scott. I'm Justin. We'll talk to you Monday night from Philly.
All right. Hi, Velvet. Don't worry. No, I don't have that anymore.
All right, shut up. It's my wife's going to come storming down the stairs anyway.
God. Well, after what you did today, that's right.
Yeah, it's an interesting Tuesday. Started with snow and ended with coke.
One's as good as the other. They look the same.
Yeah, right? Both white. I guess, yeah. So hold me.